This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the Morning Run. I'm Julian Ng, together with Lin Mark and Sharat Abdullah. And we're talking about the day's biggest business news. Malaysia threatens to stop buying European products. It's not just olive oil and cheeses. It's also about the cars and the heavy equipment that we import a lot from Europe. So this will make Europe pay attention, I think. And to get more about this, actually tomorrow we will be having on the breakfast grill Dato' Sri Shamsul Iskandar, Deputy Minister for the Primary Industries. However, on today's breakfast grill, coming up in about 15 minutes' time after the 8 a.m. news, we have Chin Jit Sen, Managing Director of New Hong Fat Group, which has been around since 1977.
So it started off as a trading company, so providing automotive parts, and later moved up the value chain into manufacturing in 1989. Today, it is a major distributor and exporter of automotive body replacement parts. So Roshan Kanesan speaks to NHF Group to find out if they can move further up that value chain and adapt to changing global trends.
Okay, bringing back the news to something slightly more political. Recently, in an op-ed, Professor James Chin of the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania wrote that the Pakatan Harapan government is losing steam for not keeping to its reform agenda.
So having just recently lost two by-elections, and now a lot of people are saying that there could be a possibility that Harapan administration will also lose the next by-election. So James noted that Harapan administration knows the right thing to do is to move away from the racial affirmative action policy to one that is need-based. But the new government, they seem to appear, you know, stagnant along with its civil service, and it's because they're still resisting change.
Yeah, so it's not great optics. So the result has caused Harapan supporters to be quite disheartened by the slow pace of reform. The issue is also compounded by rumours about when exactly the Prime Minister position will be given to PKR President Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim. So James feels that these rumours are creating mistrust among Harapan parties and creating an even more negative perception of the government, distracting them from concentrating on reforms.
So we actually have the man on the line, Professor James Chin, thanks for joining us this morning. How do you think Pakatan Harapan should move forward to convince everyone it's got what it takes?
Well, I think there's several things that Pakatan will have to deal with fairly soon. As you know, the next general election is about 3 years away. So two things need to happen quickly. I think the first thing on everybody's mind is the power transition. I think the current Prime Minister Mahathir has mentioned a few times that he's not going to be around for the next general elections. So whoever has to take over, they better be sure that they name the person quickly and set a timeline. As you know, one of the peculiar things about the Malaysian political system is that almost every key decision flows from the Prime Minister's office. Now, if you have questions about who's going to be the next Prime Minister, obviously, that will create a lot of unnecessary tensions in the political system, and the bureaucracy will not work very well if they do not know who is the incoming Prime Minister. So my suggestion is that just get on with it, name the date that they're going to hand over the power, and more importantly, name the person they're going to name who's going to be the next Prime Minister. I think that's the first thing they need to do. Secondly, I think they really need to look at this Malay agenda thing. I think it's quite obvious that this thing has caused unnecessary tensions between all the different ethnic groups in this country and sort of divide the country between the booming trust and the non-booming trust. I think we need to go back and look at this whole idea of affirmative action. I think there's a lot that can be done to help the poorer members of the Malaysian community, but I think most people will agree that we really need to move away from the ethnic angle, which is that you only help people of a certain racial group. You really need to move to a needs-based society where you want to help all the poor people, what we call the bottom 40, across the board without looking at what race or religion they belong to. The third thing I think we really need to resolve fairly quickly before next general election is, of course, the Malaysia Agreement. Now, this thing is not widely understood in Peninsula Malaysia, but it's really the number one issue in Sabah and Sarawak. And if you don't resolve this issue, there will be a lot of tensions in the federal-state relationships, which I think is not a good thing. So right. I think these are some of the key issues that have to resolve fairly quickly before the next general election.
Right, Professor. And how best do you think Pakatan should respond to the rhetoric on race and religion, particularly from the UMNO PAS Union?
I think the first thing that everyone needs to recognize is that one of the reasons why the previous regime, Barisan Nasional, was able to stay in power for almost 60 years is because they've always won the middle ground. So right now, the middle ground in the last general elections was obviously won by Pakatan Harapan. And this is a strong reminder that, you know, if you want to win elections in Malaysia, you have to move to the middle ground. If you move to the right or to the left, you're not likely to win the middle ground. So in the case of UMNO and PAS, it's very obvious that they're playing political Islam and they're moving to the far right. So my view is that Pakatan Harapan should not do the same thing. They should, in fact, cement the middle ground as really their strength. And if they move closer to the middle ground, carry out the reforms, I have very little doubt that the Malaysian polity will vote them back in the next general election.
Thanks. Thanks so much for your time. And that was Professor James Chin of the Asian Institute at the University of Tasmania. Guys, so transparency in the power transition, I'm not sure if Dr. Mahathir is going to reveal when he's going to step down anytime soon.
No, it doesn't seem like it. It seems like they've been putting it off, really, because, we have seen Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim coming back into the forefront, even though he was originally said that he wouldn't. So it seems like he is positioning himself in order to make that transition available and easier. But we haven't heard anything from the Prime Minister himself.
Yeah, so I don't know. One of the ways to manage this mistrust is just by naming Anwar Ibrahim as, by giving him a ministerial post or maybe even a deputy minister. So that would give a clearer direction.
Okay, guys, today is also the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. And on that note, we're going to talk more about this. And last week, a study conducted by the Centre for Governance and Political Studies, or CENTGPS, has found that Malays and Indians are more likely to experience discrimination when applying for jobs in the private sector, especially men of the two ethnicities.
Yeah, so CENTGPS said its study concluded Malays and Indians faced more hurdles to secure job interviews compared to Mandarin-speaking Chinese applicants who topped all the callback rates from hiring companies. So the survey was an experimental study in which the researchers posed as 7 different applicants from all 3 major ethnic groups, but with the same qualifications and other criteria deemed necessary to make them prime candidates.
So since the release of the survey, the study has generated a lot of debate, with many citing its inconsistency and the intentions behind such work, while others have thrown support behind the think tank, decrying for reform to ensure that there shouldn't be any more discrimination in the private sector employment. So this study was an expansion of an earlier research into a private sector employment practices, which was conducted by 2 politicians, Lee Kwok On and also Dr. Muhammad Abdul Khalid, who is part of the government New Economic Action Council.
So we have Lee Hock An on the line, and he is a senior fellow at the Institute of Southeast Asian Studies in Singapore. Good morning, Hock An. Thanks for joining us. What are your thoughts on CENTGPS's studies in comparison to your earlier study with Muhammad Khalid?
Yes, good morning, and good to be with you. Just a bit of a correction there. We are researchers and not politicians. I think that was attributed just now. I'll just leave it at that, whether that's a compliment or not.
Sorry about that.
So, yeah, no problem. Yeah. So, yeah, both of these studies adopted this what's called the field experiment approach. So I just want to be clear about that. It's not a survey, but a field experiment. And the strength of these, and they're widely used, and it's validated, with numerous exercises around the world. So the strength is that it's actually twofold, right? Firstly, it observes the decisions that employers make, rather than in a survey where you could asking employers, do you discriminate? In which case, the likelihood that they might be untruthful is high if they actually do, or people have their own concept of discrimination. So there's all kinds of ambiguity there. If you ask employees, have you experienced discrimination? I mean, I think these are valid, questions and surveys, can do that. But they cannot really be conclusive, because also employees wouldn't have the full picture of, why they may feel discriminated that they were not called for an interview, but they don't have the full picture of the other applicant pool. So we actually observe decisions by sending, we call fictitious job applications, fictitious resumes, that are credible. So, you know, employers believe that they are real, but the researchers have designed them in a way that they are not real people. But then we call, the purpose is we want to compare who gets called for interview and who doesn't. So the second strength is that it has the ability to isolate the race factor while ensuring that the quality, you know, is on par. And you can do this two ways, either with a very large sample of resumes that on average are equal or comparable, right? So, or a small sample and each are identical. So this is to address the question, and of course it rises, and it's still arising, I think, because there's still a misunderstanding that these surveys are comparing comparably qualified. So we have taken, it's isolated the race factor. The difference is that they have a different identity and the ability is comparable or on par. Okay, so those are that's about the field experiment. I really had to I think just to clarify that.
Right.
Now for the differences, can I? So some of the differences. I think this is where it gets a bit more interesting. So we did the first approach with the large sample, and we had Malay and Chinese male and female, and we generated 3,012 unique applicants. For SendGPS, they went with the second one, which using a smaller sample of identical applicants. And they had male and female, Malay, Chinese, and Indian, as you mentioned just now, what there were seven. Okay, so now the findings. We both define discrimination as in, again, when employers receive comparably qualified applications of different races, that they are more likely to call one over the other. And in both cases, more likely to call Chinese than Malay. And for SendGPS, they had Indian, and least likely to be called was actually Indian. Now, there have been problems, as you flagged just now, or their concerns and questions over whether or not they're truly identical, right? And I think those really need to be addressed, and I hope, you know, SendGPS, you know, will clarify those. But I don't think that, you know, those would override their finding. I mean, the disparity is so huge that even if they really ensure that they were all totally identical, that you know, it, I don't think even if they made them identical, that suddenly the gap would be closed. And we should understand that the reasons for not being totally identical was not to arouse suspicion. So, you know, there were merits to that approach. On the language issue, which was one other question the SendGPS was trying to investigate, specifically when Mandarin language, right, is stipulated in a job ad, whether or not that is really required and they're looking for Mandarin speakers, or whether it's just to, as the word they use, as a smokescreen to screen out non-Chinese. On this one, I want to emphasize and draw out again the differences. So if I may, for our study...
Unfortunately, we are actually running out of time and we're heading into the 8 a.m. news. Can you just give us a quick answer? Based on your results, are we racist?
I think that's asking the wrong question on this particular issue. I mean, especially with regard to this study. So I do want to say that for the Chinese language issue, again, this is something that often gets a bit clouded by people getting very emotive and acrimonious and polarized by using that, by accusing you know, employers of putting up that language requirement for ulterior motives. I think the study got it wrong, and I think by and large we should accept that it is something, you know, we should move forward, right? It can be a legitimate job.
Thank you so much for your time. And that was Lee Hock An, Senior Fellow at the Institute of Southeast Asian Studies from Singapore. Stay tuned for The Breakfast Grill, where Roshan Kanisan speaks to the New Hong Fat Group, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.